for 30 plus years. I've seen every type of child grow up.
Instead of giving me what I wanted, she gave me what I needed, which was truth.
Don't let emotions win. Let truth win.
Do your very best, and you should have a lot of fun while you do it. And the better you get at something, the more fun you're going to have at something.
You moms and dads are wired with everything you need to be a parent to a great kid. Welcome to Parenting Great Kids. This is episode number 39, Healthy Marriages, Healthy Families. I'm your host, Dr. Meg Meeker, and today I'm excited to welcome my friends Mark and Susan Merrill. We're going to be talking about how much it matters for spouses to invest in a healthy marriage in order to have a healthy family. It's such an important conversation. Also in this episode, I'll be featuring a listener question about talking to kids about the death of a beloved family pet, something I have real experience with. As always, I'll share my points to ponder so you can start using tools right away. Parents, remember, don't just download episodes. Click subscribe. When you do that, you're joining my parenting revolution, and every new episode will automatically show up in your subscribed list. And we'd love for you to write us a review on iTunes and let us know what you think about the podcast. They're here for you. Also, not only are we on iTunes, but the Parenting Great Kids podcast is also available in the Google Play Store and on Stitcher. So no matter where you get your podcasts, subscribe today and don't miss one single episode. Parents, we all know that talking with our kids about sex is uncomfortable. And when it comes to having that initial talk with your child about sex when they're about 8 years old, I always say in every couple, there's one who's a chicken and one who's an even bigger chicken who just won't have the talk at all. But the truth is, no matter how uncomfortable it is, beginning a conversation about sex early with your child is extremely important because it puts you in the driver's seat. The tricky part is many parents often don't know where to begin or where to end. What if they say the wrong thing? What if they talk too much or too little or use the wrong words? Too often, not knowing how or when they should approach the topic of sex with their child, many parents just don't do it. And then this leaves your child at the hands of the culture or his friends to teach him about sex. I have created a digital toolkit just for you called How to Have the Talk with Your Child. It walks you through the process of having that initial conversation with your child about sex. The toolkit's packed with a variety of resources and all the information you need to get ready to have that initial conversation, including ages and stages chart to help you determine when to have the talk with your child. There's an ebook on talking to your child about sex, a script to help guide you through the discussion. And for those of you who are really, really chicken, you're the big chicken, it even includes a video of me giving the talk directly to your child. How easy is that? Talking to your child about sex doesn't need to be intimidating or scary. It can be really a great experience, and it'll help you establish a strong relationship with your child. I'm excited to offer you How to Have the Talk with Your Child Toolkit for 20% off. Just go to my website, megmeekermd.com, click on Parenting Resources, and user code TALKPODCAST when you check out. Parents, this topic about sex is far too important to hand over to somebody else to talk to your kids about. You need to do it. Go to my website, check out How to Have the Talk with Your Child Toolkit, 20% off. You need to stay in the driver's seat when it comes to talking to your kids about sex, and I'm here to help. So parents, thanks for listening. This is episode number 39. Stay with us. So now let's dive into my points to ponder. First, your marriage matters to your kids. You know, parents often tell me that as long as they, mom or dad, have a good relationship with their kids individually, then their kids will be fine. And I hear this most frequently from parents who've gone through a divorce. Mom says, well, I have a great relationship with my kids. And dad says, I have a great relationship with my kids. But what they're missing is something very, very important. And that is, you do have to have a good relationship with your kids as individuals. However, kids gain a tremendous amount of security from the marriage itself. Why? Because when kids see their parents have a good relationship, they stop thinking about their parents in a good way. They don't worry about their parents. If a son sees a mother or a dad who's distressed, he begins worrying about that dad. If a daughter sees her mother or dad distressed, she does the same thing. In other words, kids whose parents are single often worry about their parents' happiness. Is my mom okay? Is my mom making enough money? Is my dad lonely? Does my dad cook good enough food? And kids take on a lot of burden for their parents when they feel that there's a hole in the parent's life. But when a child sees mom and dad getting along well together, internally, it's as if his mind and his heart goes, ah, okay, I don't have to worry about them. I don't have to think about them. Now I can just go back to being a kid, feeling what I feel, thinking what I think, doing my homework, worrying about soccer practice, and not having to worry about my parents. So friends, I know it's a very unpopular stance, but this is what I always recommend to the parents of the kids whom I take care of. And that is, stay married as long as you possibly can. Many parents say, well, it's unhealthy for my kids to see an unhealthy marriage. Not necessarily, because here's the deal. Kids aren't thinking about their parents' happiness when their parents are married. They're thinking about their own. So even though you may be in a volatile marriage, or there may be a lot of discontent or arguing, whatever, it's still better for kids to be in a home where parents are married and not getting along than for kids to be in a home where the parents are divorced. Because remember, when you divorce your spouse, your child still has to go spend time with your ex. And if your ex has a volatile temper, then your child is going to go and spend time with your ex alone without you there. Now, I know there are exceptions to this. If you're in a relationship that's frankly abusive and you are in danger or your kids are in danger, that's a completely different story. But by and large, in most marriages, I find if you can just hang on until your kids are older, 18 or 19 or 20, and then part ways, it's a whole lot healthier for your kids. Because marriage matters to your kids, not just you as an individual, but the marriage gives your kids security. Second, small, simple changes by a spouse bring about extraordinary changes in marriages. You know, many parents who are going through an upset in a marriage, I've been there, my husband and I have been married 36 years, and I know what it's like to want to walk out, believe me. And my husband knows as well. There isn't a marriage out there that hasn't been through some incredibly rocky, rough times. And many times, couples who are struggling with a marriage feel like they need an overhaul to their marriage. I get it. I believed at one time that my husband needed a complete personality overhaul. And maybe he did and maybe he didn't. Maybe I was the one who needed it. Well, this may be true for some. The truth is, most marriages get a whole lot better when a husband or wife makes a small change. Change the way you speak to your husband if you're the wife. Change the amount of time you listen to your wife if you're a husband. Be a little bit nicer. Be a little bit kinder. Hold your temper. Take a month and say two positive things about your spouse to them. Just pay a compliment twice a day for 1 month and see what happens in your marriage. You know, think about it. What do you really want from your spouse? And this is what the Merrills talk so beautifully about. What do you really want from your spouse? Is it more money? Do you want a nicer car? Chances are you really don't care as much about those things. What you really want is more attention, more respect, more affirmation, and some more affection. You know, each of this is easy for one spouse to give to another. You say, well, my heart isn't in it. I don't like my husband. I don't want to give him more attention. He's a narcissist and an egomaniac. Why in the world should I give him more attention? Because it matters to your marriage. Try. You say, I can't give my husband respect. He doesn't deserve respect. If you could only see the way he show him respect. He's the father of your children. He's your husband. There's a reason you chose him in the first place. Whether you feel it or not, speak respectfully. Because as my good friend Emerson Eggerich says, men need respect and women need love. So every day for 1 month, try to show your husband more respect. Speak more respectfully. You say, well, why should I show my wife more affection? She never shows affection to me. because you're the man. That's why. You're the husband. She wants more affection. Show a little more affection. Each of these is easy for one spouse to give to the other if you just make an effort. And you don't have to feel it. You just need to do it. Because, you know, a lot of times your feelings will catch up with your behavior. You've heard that before. So small, simple changes that you make in your relationship with your spouse, how you relate to your spouse, make extraordinary changes in your marriage. For 1 month, I challenge each of you, commit to one change per day for 1 month, whether your spouse makes changes or not, and see what happens at the end of the month. Third, since mothers usually set the tone in the home, a healthy marriage helps your wife set a better one. You know, we've heard the age-old adage, if mom isn't happy, then no one's happy. And you know, that's very true. What I find in my practice is if I see a child who's stressed or worrying or having anxiety, and I sit down and talk with mom, usually mom is feeling some stress too. Now, am I blaming kids' anxiety on moms? No. But what I'm saying is if you as a mother are down in the dumps, you're feeling melancholy every day, you feel hopeless, if you are stressed and anxious, your kids will feel it. That's because they're close to you, they love you, and they are so in tune to your feelings. So it's very important, dads, for you to recognize that your wife spends, this in general, not always true, there's some at-home dads, so this would be, I'd be speaking to the wife, whoever is the at-home parent is the one who sets the tone, and usually it's the mom who spends more time with the kids. But if you're a dad who spends more time with kids, it's very important for you to pay attention to your mood and your tone. So dads, I want to appeal to you. If your wife is the one who spends a lot more time with the kids at home, you need to do whatever you can to help her moods. You need to take her out. You need to pay attention. You need to listen to her. You need to watch for her stress level and say, and pull her aside and say, honey, what can I do to help you with your stress? You don't say your stress is stressing our kids out, but you go to her and you say, you know, I'm concerned that you just don't seem as happy as you used to be. I'm concerned because you seem anxious and worried and stressed. What can I do to help you? How can I ease your burden? How can I make your load at home a little bit lighter, or your load at work a little bit lighter? And if you're the mom and you're the one who's spending less time at home and you have an at-home husband, then that's what you need to do for him. Because the parent who is home most with the kids is the one who sets the tone in the home. And the parent who is home less, it's his or her responsibility to attend to the parent who's setting the tone in the home for all of the family. So make sure you're nurturing and you're attending to the at-home parent, because their mood and their tone and their level of happiness and contentment is going to spill over onto the kids, and ultimately it's going to spill over onto you. So help mothers who are home with their kids be happier and more content. And if you're an at-home dad, it's important for mothers to do the same. Fourth, good marriages show how men should treat women and women treat men. Good marriages show how men should treat women and women treat men. In my book, Boys Should Be Boys, I wrote that young men, because they're visual people, need to see how a man relates to a woman in order to know how to imitate it. Boys are visual, and they literally need to watch a father speak to his wife. They need to watch a father touch and encourage his wife in order to know how to do it when they're older. So if you're a single mother and you don't have your husband around or the child's father around, make sure to expose your sons and daughters to good men so that they can see how men are to treat you and how men are to treat your daughters. Because again, daughters watch how men treat women to learn how they should expect to be treated when they're older. And believe it or not, girls who grow up watching their mothers command respect from a husband or men in their lives grow up to be women who will command respect from men as well. daughters need to learn how they're to be spoken to, how they're to be respected and encouraged. So they watch to see how their mother is treated by her spouse, by her brother, by her father, and all men that engage with her. In fact, watching how a mother is treated by her husband may be the most important way a daughter's future health is crafted. And this is because daughters grow up to imitate their mothers. And if a mother had a horrific marriage and was abused and the daughter watched abuse, that daughter is far more likely to marry an abuser. So it isn't necessarily how a daughter is treated by her dad. That's very important too. But a daughter picks up cues by watching how her mother is treated by her husband as to how she is to grow up and expect to be treated by her husband when she's older. So for both sons and daughters, living with and witnessing a healthy marriage tremendously impacts their future happiness. And it really determines how that child is going to treat their spouse or be treated by their spouse. Parents, I'd like to invite you to listen in now to a wonderful conversation I had with Mark and Susan Merrill. Well, Susan and Mark, thanks so much for joining me on our podcast.
Well, thank you for having us. We're so excited to be here.
Really grateful, Meg. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. You're an extraordinary couple. It's neat. You know, you work together. Walt and I work together. I know a lot of couples don't work together, but you guys do in your family first. You're very, very busy folks, and you have children. So tell us what a day in the life of the Merrill household is like. Susan, can you tell us?
No day looks the same. So I just want to clarify, in any given season, we do have five kids and we adopted two of them when they were older. So it seems like every 3 to 4 years, a day in the life of the Merrills changes drastically. And I did not work for a time, but I do. I have worked the last 8 years with Mark at Family First. So it's craziness. Our kids are older now, but we do still have three at home. And so, you know, we delegate. It's delegation. Like, we are totally into a meal kits right now. And they come to the door and I assign one of the kids to make them, and we're all out at the door by, you know, 8:30, and it's crazy.
Meg, you mentioned something about busyness, and actually that's something that we're constantly fighting against in our marriage, because busyness really does lead to neglecting those relationships, neglecting our spouses. And we all have to make choices. And one of the things that we're really focused on often is a stop doing list. What are the things that we need to stop doing? And everything that you do, that Walt does, you guys do together, that Susan and I do, are probably good things, right? But we find that good things aren't always the best things of what God wants us to do. So we kind of try to look at everything, even those small things that just take a few minutes to do, and say, do we really need to do this? And focus on what we should focus on.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. And I love your approach, because the truth of the matter is, most married couples, and certainly most parents, find themselves with this. There are so many opportunities, so many fun and wonderful and enriching things to do every day, either for spouses to do separately or for kids to do away from their parents. And often what it comes down to is really, you know, making a list and sort of deleting things from the bottom up and sort of saying, what do I really, really want to do today, or what should I do? And let's forget the rest, because I find that spouses neglect one another because they get too busy, but parents can emotionally neglect kids because the kids are so busy, and it's all well-intentioned. It's not because we're bad people. But let's talk about marriages, because, Susan, you wrote lists to love by for busy wives, and Mark, you wrote lists to love by for busy husbands. So let's talk about that. Let's talk very practically, Susan. You know, most women that I see are exhausted. They're a bit anxious about their workload. They're working outside the home. They're working inside the home. They're working for their kids. They're doing a million things, and they lay their head on the pillow at the end of the night going, oh, I didn't get that done. I didn't get that done. Why did you write List to Love By for Busy Wives?
Well, our mission here is to help families love well. And that is one thing that we saw resonating in all of our content that people were gravitating to, is that they're pining for that love because that's not on their to-do list.
Right.
Loving each other well usually comes naturally. And we know that the second greatest commandment is to love your neighbor as yourself. Our closest neighbor is absolutely our family.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get busy, like Mark mentioned before, we neglect, and usually we will neglect our husband, our spouse, before our children, because guess what? We're all about those kids, and that to-do list is always heavy on our minds, and if our children are teary or happy or sad or whatever, it is on the forefront of our hearts. But it is very easy when you consider your spouse as an extension of you to neglect him. And
right.
That's what we thought. How can we give people a tool that they can use fast, quick, easy, daily, something small to read? The chapters are so short. And actually, the table of contents, they can scan the table of contents and think, okay, what areas am I not loving well in? And let me just focus on that list. The end of every chapter is just like three questions. Say, okay, here's where to focus. So these are bite-sized habits to start forming in your marriage that will help you love well.
Can you, well, two questions first. Why is it important to work on your marriage, and why is it important to the family and to the children to work on a marriage?
Well, I would say first, when you covenant, it's a covenantal relationship. When you got married, it was for better, for worse. You promised all these things in covenant. And so the family's only going to be as strong as the foundation of your marriage. And mm-hmm. that's a great way the enemy gets to the family, is by breaking down the marriage. So you have to invest first. That first neighbor that God calls you to when you enter in that covenant is your husband. And so mm-hmm. that's the foundation.
Let's dive into some of those lists that you were talking about, the real practical. You said that women can scan the table of contents. Can you talk about some of those lists that you give in the book? Because you're right, the book is very practical, and it's very to the point. And you really can read it and go, oh, okay, I'll do that. Oh, okay, I can do that today. So can you give us a little taste of what's in there?
I can. So some of them are extremely simple, like five kinds of compliments or 10 things to text or things like that. Some of them are deeper. Three keys to unlock the door to intimacy. Five things wives should stop doing. 10 things husbands want to hear from their wives. Again, that we tried to even, we were so systematic and not wanting to overwhelm wives and husbands in these books that we even kind of alternate between a more emotional thing and a more practical thing.
Mm.
So they're so simple. You can do one a week. You can do one a day. If you do this with your husband, like if he does the book the same time you do, they kind of mirror each other, although there's a few chapters that are different because we all know men and women are different. But if you do them together, you can talk through a couple of these questions at the end and say, you know what, honey, I hear you that I have not been complimenting you the way you like and that you need that and you're feeling discouraged. I'm going to make that a priority and go back and check yourself in a month and ask him again, did I develop that habit of something that loves you well to this extent that you feel it and we feel better in our marriage? Those are a few chapters depending on where you are. And again, we wrote this for us. Mark and I are almost 30 years into our marriage, and with five kids, we let go a lot of those things were valuable to each other. But we also wrote this based on a lot of feedback we got from our followers and what they were needing. So hopefully it covers everybody's bases.
Well, I think that, you know, the truth is every single person, every wife should read this book, because every single one of us does exactly what you say. Is, you know, the first fires that we want to put out in our house are fires that our children are creating or have burning in their lives. And we do. Well, my husband's an adult and he's busy and he can do this, so I'm going to help the kids first. And I'm wondering, Mark, do men do that too? Do husbands do that too? Or is that a mom thing? Because my husband will constantly say, you know, you're always paying more attention to the kids than you pay attention to me. Maybe that's a mom thing, but I'm wondering, do dads do that too?
Meg, I think it is a mom thing, perhaps primarily, but it's a dad thing as well. But I'd say if I had to guess on average that it is more of a mom's thing. But certainly the kids do need a loving dad, and they long for a hero to lead them in their life. And that's why it's really so important that the dads be just as engaged as the moms are.
Well, I love it. And that's what's so cool about the two of you is that you really work as a great team. And Mark, you wrote List to Love By for busy husbands. And you work with All Pro Dads. So tell us a little bit about All Pro Dads and then tell us about your list for the husbands.
Sure. Well, All Pro Dad is one of the flagship programs of our national nonprofit organization called Family First. And we established All Pro Dad over 20 years ago. As you know, Meg, we have a lot of active NFL and NCAA players and coaches involved, mm-hmm. guys like Tony Dungy and many others that you and I know. And so really, we use the platform of sports to reach out to dads to get them connected with their kids and give them the resources they need to be All Pro Dads, to love their children well and to lead them well. We determined that one of the most important things, as we were sharing earlier in the program, if we're married, is to have a happy, healthy, strong marriage relationship centered on God. And so the List of Love By for Busy Husbands book is to help us to do just that. And what is one of the greatest compliments I've received about the book from a number of wives is they say the same thing. You know what? My husband never reads, but he saw this book. He's able to pick it up, and these short lists are perfect for him. They're kind of like those honey-do lists, and they really help him to really focus and do the practical things. So I had to really speak into men's lives through this book and really talk their language so they would get it. Because really, most guys want to be better husbands. They want to be better dads. They just don't have the specific roadmap and tools to do that.
You know, and that's the operative word, specific. And I think that women intuitively can pick up, well, this is what my husband might need, and this is what my kids need. But husbands, they say, okay, I get it. Tell me what to do. And I will look at them and go, what do you mean? I just told you what to do. And they'll say, no. On Saturday morning, when I take my daughter out, where should I take her? And so they really want specifics. And that's what's so cool about your book. And a lot of men say, well, I don't read. I don't have the time to read. But if you give them a task, boy, they'll do it. They'll okay, yep, I got that. Here's the problem. I can solve that. My wife is ignored. Okay, I can solve that. And, you know, whatever it takes, it works. Let's look under the cover a little bit, the hood of your book. Tell us some of the lists that you write about, Mark.
Well, one of the lists I think is just basically very foundational, and it's list one in the List to Love By for Busy Husbands book, and it's seven truths about marriage. And just to give people a little bit of a flavor of what those lists look like, so one of the truths is marriage is not a 50-50 partnership like we hear so much in our culture today. It's really a 100% give it all you've got relationship. And really, that's what love is all about. It's all about giving of ourselves selflessly and sacrificially. Another truth is marriage is not always a stroll in the park. It's hard work. Susan and I are still working, even to this day, after almost 30 years of marriage, on our marriage. And it's hard work, just like when we go to the office. And one other truth that I think is very, very important to understand is that marriage is not just for better. It's also for worse.
I can't imagine, Mark, that being married to somebody like Susan, you ever experience worse?
Well, I can tell you that she experiences worse with me.
And I think we need to really scream that, you know, as loud as we can, because I think that what happens, particularly in our culture, which we see so much glamorized, and we say, oh, I know, that's just magazines, whatever those are, you know, and Hollywood people sort of jumping from one relationship to another. And I think that it leads people to believe that once you get married, you should be able to resolve every argument really quickly, or never argue, or always feel that this person is just so lovely and so wonderful, and they walk in the room and your heart leaps out of your chest. But the truth of the matter is, there are times you're going to hit in your marriage, you just don't want to do this anymore. And those times may last for months, they may last for years, but once you get through those, even if you don't resolve those issues, it gets better, because that's how life works. You know, nothing stays static. So I think that a lot of people hit a bumpy road in their marriage. They go, oh, I just can't do this anymore. And they try this or they try this, it doesn't work. And they go, okay, let's call it quits. But if they just hold on, and that's a message I think those of us who have been married longer really need to tell people who've been married 10 or 15 or even 20 years, hold on. I can't tell you how many couples who've gotten divorced who 10 years later go, what was I thinking? Why did I do that? Why did I think I was going to be happier? So, you know, I really just want this to be an encouraging show for those married couples who are out there struggling, because the fallout and the pain from giving up that you will experience as a husband or as a wife by the dissolution of the marriage, the dissolution of the family, is so widespread. And if you've been through divorce as a child, you understand this. But I believe that even if people are struggling or they're not struggling, to pick up a book like the two of you have written, they're two books, and just start with these little bite-sized nuggets will really help. I interrupted you. Can you keep going, Mark, on the truths of marriage?
Yeah, one thing I would say is that you said something very important, and the word that comes to my mind is perseverance. Hold on. Never, never, never give up. It's tough for us all. We all go through struggles, and that's why I think we have to go back to those fundamentals that we were talking about earlier, Meg, and that is, and they're included in these lists, remember your vows. It's for better or for worse. And remember what marriage is. It was never meant to be a contract to be broken, but it's a covenant to be cherished. It's based on an unconditional covenant, an unconditional love between God and a husband and a wife.
And here's where this, we started writing this book right when our oldest daughter got married, and it was so fun. But watching she and her fiance, now husband, say their vows kicked me back to the beginning of our marriage. And we say, for better or worse, guess what we're thinking of? The for better. The riches, the health, we're not listening to the other side. We have nowhere on our radar, like you said, that there are going to be seasons of struggle.
You know, as you watch young people standing up at the altar and taking their vows, you know, the longer I've been married, it always moves me so much, because I remember way back, I really kind of didn't understand what I was saying or getting into. I don't know how you can, because you don't know what's ahead of you. But I think that for everybody to know, you know, no matter what the problem is, there really is a way out. Can you touch down a little bit, both of you, Susan, what women expect from marriage, and then Mark, what husbands expect from out of marriage? How are they real different?
Well, one of the common things I found is that women typically have a few unfair expectations. For example, expect that he should get you. I expected that Mark would understand me like my sisters and my girlfriend and my mother understand me. He does not. And that took about 4 years into marriage to realize, you know, that, okay, we are not on the same way. Like, you do not get me. And I have to, you know, learn to speak in a different language. Expect that he will never be tempted. Men are very visually tempted today. And if you are offended and insulted, it is wrong that they are tempted. However, they are wired visually. And if you get upset about that all the time without talking it through rationally, then you're being unfair to them. So, you know, getting on that same page was another expectation that you need to have.
I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Mark and Susan Merrill. We need to take a quick break, but please don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Now that it's back to school season, it feels like there's a million new things to do every day. And getting a balanced, healthy, kid-friendly dinner on the table every night is easier said than done. Now you can cook delicious, nutritionist-approved recipes the whole family will love with the new family menu from Sunbasket. Sunbasket is a meal kit delivery service that sends organic and sustainable ingredients right to your door. They also offer paleo, lean and clean, gluten-free, and vegetarian options. Each week, Sunbasket features a recipe co-created with Chef Tyler Florence of the Food Network. And friends, I want to tell you, I use Sunbasket and love it. I like to cook good food, and Sunbasket delivers fresh, ready-to-cook food right to my door, so there's no grocery shopping. Each Sunbasket recipe comes with pre-measured ingredients and is ready in around 30 minutes. It's easy prep and easy cleanup, perfect for busy school nights. Plus, you get to skip the grocery store. One less thing to worry about. Go to sunbasket.com/Meg today and get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/Meg for $35 off. sunbasket.com/Meg. Mark, what do husbands expect from wives? Give us a peek into the male brain, please.
Well, as Susan said, she shared one list in the wives' book, but I have one in the husband's book, The List to Love By for Busy Husbands, is 5 unfair expectations you may have of your wife. And there's some in there that are similar and some that are different. So one unfair expectation that we might have as husbands about our wives is expecting that she's always ready for sex. And generally, women don't think about sex quite as often as men do, doctor,
No, they don't. Yeah.
But husbands are apt to forget this. And so a man compounds the problem when he views his wife like a video game, expecting that with a few pushes of the right button, she'll be turned on instantaneously. And so one of the things that is a fair expectation is that the wife and the husband, this goes both ways, will strive to meet one another's sexual needs. And sometimes we know, having been married 38 years, you have to decide almost 30 years.
And wow.
I'm aging us. And so that we will, it's kind of, what do you do when you're not in the mood? And I've actually written a blog on that. And sometimes you just do things and you have that physical intimacy even when you don't feel like it. So that's an appropriate expectation. Other expectations are that, you know, an unfair expectation is she'll agree with you on all financial matters. Again, a fair expectation is that you will have a sit-down, honest discussion and go through your financial matters. How much debt are we willing to take on as a couple? What are our purchasing priorities? How much will we spend? How much will we save? How much will we share with others? And one other one I could point out, an unfair expectation, is expecting that your wife should always know you love her. You know, you've heard the joke, I told you I loved you when we got married. If anything changes, I'll let you know. Well, that's not true in marriage. And I need to expect from my wife, and she needs to expect from me, that she always knows that I love her no matter what. I may not like her sometimes, but every night when I go to bed, even after an argument, I will say to Susan, you know, I love you.
You know, that is so true, you know, and you're so right on, because I think that women need, you know, Emerson Eggert always says, and I know that you're familiar with his work, but that, you know, men need respect and women need love. And for this sense that really what I always want to know from Walt is, but do you really love me? Do you really love me? Even after all these years, we just still need to be reassured. You know, and back to the sexual intimacy, one thing that really helped me years ago, talking exactly what we were talking about, Mark, is that I read that men bond through sexual activity. Women feel like they need to be emotionally bonded and then they enjoy sex, but it's sort of the reverse. And once I understood that, it really, really helped me, because I think that for some men, that act makes them feel closer to their wives, and then they want the emotional intimacy. Women want the emotional intimacy first. And there are some very stark differences between men and women, but for me, that really helped, because I just kept thinking, what's wrong with you? We just had a big argument. How can you be feeling this way? And then I realized that was part of his way to draw back to me and work through issues.
You're exactly right on target, no question about it. And that's why, you know, we talk about, what do you do when you're not in the mood? What about those kind of situations? And Susan has really, over the years, done a great job at navigating through that. There have been many times when, you know, she's focused on the kids and all the challenges that we have there and other challenges in life. But she's been wonderful working through that.
I love that. You're absolutely right. I think that it's so easy for women to feel, he just wants me for my body, or he just wants me for this.
Yep.
It's not about that. That's not true. Men need to know, I'm going to have a connection. This is sort of my doorway to your heart and soul. And for a woman, they're like, well, let's talk about my heart and soul first. But you're right. Yeah. You have to make that time. And I will tell you, even just that alone can improve your marriage tremendously. by making sort of regular kind of schedules so you both are emotionally and mentally prepared and engaged. I think that's hugely important, and I think it's a huge issue of misunderstanding between husbands and wives, particularly wives who may have been abused earlier, you know, sexually abused. It can be a really messy issue. So, but it's a terribly important one to work through. So, you know, with a house full of kids, it can be really pretty interesting. So, well, has writing these books, how has it helped the two of you?
One thing for me, Meg, is that this was a very humbling and humiliating experience. And what I mean by that is I had to look deep. I had to dig deep and not just kind of talk about surface type of things, but we had to be vulnerable. And you know this as an author of a number of books, including Hero, your most recent one, which are all awesome, by the
way.
One of the things that I had to do is really dig deep and share transparently those things. And so Susan and I had some good discussions about some of those things, and it really did help our marriage. And one thing also that I've noticed in writing books like this and writing a lot of blogs and doing podcasts and radio shows is that it's easy to talk about these things. It's really tough to do them sometimes. And so I'm still learning after all these years of marriage, 30 years of marriage, being a dad for 27 years, it's just really challenging. And so I've got to work really hard at it, and I'm still learning.
Susan, how about you? How has writing the book changed your marriage?
Well, it's been a great thing for me because, again, like I said, you know, I am not always the wife or mother that I want to be. And at the end of the day, if I can go to sleep and getting back to the beginning of the podcast when you said women are so overwhelmed and they drop into bed feeling like they missed the boat. If you can, at the end of the day, drop in bed and say, oh, well, I loved my husband well because I complimented him on this and I saw his face light up, or I remember to greet him when we got home instead of just acting like another day. And again, so many of these practical things in here work with your kids too. You know, I like to think in my head when I fall asleep, check each person off and say, okay, did I give them one good word? Think about, did I love well? And these are lists to love by.
You know, and really it's life, whether you're in marriage or in parenting, it's making the small behavior changes that bring about the biggest relationship changes. Mm-hmm. What I've seen. You know, you say, well, okay, compliment somebody. Yes. If you compliment your husband once or twice a day and you do the same thing with your kids on a regular basis, guess what happens to the relationship? It shifts. It shifts the whole dynamic of the family. And as a child advocate, I want to say here too, when married couples get along better and they love better, kids feel more secure. They feel more free to be themselves. They relax. They're happier kids because kids worry about their parents. And when there's constant tension between parents and kids are worried about mom or dad getting divorced, guess what happens to every part of their life? It begins to just sort of fall apart. And many married couples think, and even divorced couples, will say, well, what kids really need is to make sure mom loves them and to make sure dad loves them. And that is true. However, kids gain security from the marriage, which is neither mom nor dad. It is mom and dad. And, you know, I can't stress that enough because kids, I can just see on kids' faces, if they're worried about the marriage breaking, it's terrifying for a lot of kids. And parents really believe, well, it's going to be okay because I'm going to live next door and dad will live on the other side and we'll all get along well. Yeah, the kids can do okay, but the security and strength they draw from the marriage itself is gone. And I think that a lot of times parents forget that.
And Meg, that's why it's so important for many reasons to have that great relationship with our spouses. Really, marriage is the doing of God, but it's also the display of God. We are really speaking to other people about God's goodness to us and how He loves His people, and we are reflecting that. And so the most important thing we can do is just to model consistently that love towards one another so they can see oh, this is what marriage looks like. This is how we're supposed to do marriage. So just by our example of a strong marriage, our kids and other people can be uplifted and encouraged to have a great marriage themselves.
Beautifully said. Well, Mark and Susan, we're running out of time, and I want to hear just a couple more things from both of you. Susan, can you leave us with two principles that you would like to speak to wives about that come from your book that are very, very important to sort of live by and to love your husbands well by?
So it's exactly what you just said. And I wish I had learned this maybe earlier in my parenting, is to love well. You know, the time is now to love well, and it's not tomorrow, it's not later, and it should be your highest priority. Mm-hmm. I wish I had known that so many of the things I thought were important for me to do as a wife and mother pale in comparison to just loving them well.
Wow, that's beautiful. Mark, how about two principles for you?
Well, let me tag on to what Susan said, which, of course, I completely agree with. And that is, if we are to love our spouses well, there's only one way to do that. And that is to first love God well. The greatest commandment, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. That's the first and greatest commandment. Second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. As Susan shared at the beginning of our time together, closest neighbor is our spouse. And we can only love, we know the Bible says, because God first loved us. And we need to understand and to sense that love, and for that love to flow through us into the life of our spouse. So that's why it's so important to love our spouses well, but we first got to love God well as part of that. The second thing I would say, and this I'm going to loop back also to something you said, and you said hold on, hold on, hold on. And that's the word, perseverance is something that I speak often about in relationships. You know what? Susan and I have gone through a number of seasons in our marriage when it would have been easier just to say, you know what? We're done. This person is not doing what I expected them to do in our marriage, and so I'm out of here. But you know what? We've got to persevere. We've persevered through all these years, even though through those difficult seasons, even though they might not just be for a day or two, it may be a month or even years. Persevere, persevere, persevere. And this is the most important thing that we can do in our relationship.
I love it. It gets better. If you hold on, it just gets better and better.
Yes,
whether it's
it does.
A marriage, it does. Whether it's a marriage relationship,
yes,
or with kids. And I will tell you, as much as I dreaded the empty nest years, you know what? I remember once I adjusted, I looked at my husband and I thought, oh, you're kind of cute. Now I remember why I married you.
And fun. Cute and fun. You have time to be fun now.
It is so much fun. It is really, really fun. You guys have been wonderful. How can people learn more about Family First or read your books or connect with you?
Sure. Well, to get the List to Love By books, they can just check out listtoloveby.com, listtoloveby.com, and there's some videos there about the book. Susan and I sharing a little bit about it, but they can also order their book that way as well. We mentioned before, we both do blogging like you do, Meg, and do podcasts. We have the Family First podcast, and you can go to markmerrill.com, susan.me to check out kind of our various blogging as well. So those are a couple sites that people can check out as well.
Well, your books are wonderful. List to Love By for husbands and List to Love By for wives. And your organization is fabulous. You know I love you guys and everything you do. And I strongly encourage all of our listeners to go check out your books, check out your blogs, and check out your podcast, because you have so much to say. And what you say works. And that's why I love so much what you do, because it's practical and it really, really works. Susan and Mark, thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you for having us. We love you too.
Yes, and we are grateful for you, Meg. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, parents, let's get social. I want to hear from you and interact with you. You can connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD. Or if you have a question, please send it to askmeg at megmeekermd.com. Today, I have a question from Cindy, who writes, Dear Dr. Meg, We have a family pet that my husband and I have had since she was a puppy. She's now 12 years old and has a spinal disease. We know it's a matter of months before she needs to be put down. Our 8 and 4-year-old are very fond of Zoe, and we are already dreading that conversation. How do we explain the death or putting down of our beloved family pet to our two boys? Well, Cindy, first of all, I feel for you. Having a pet who you have loved for many years and is part of your family, having that pet die is a very painful experience. So first I want to say to you, I believe that this will be a harder experience for you and your husband than it will be for your children. You have a history, you have a longer history with this pet than your kids do. Plus, you have taken care of the pet and the kids haven't taken the care of the pet. So I believe that you and your husband are going to grieve more deeply when the pet passes. But how do you explain to your kids about the death of a pet? I have experienced this. I recently experienced this with my 4-year-old granddaughter, and she and I actually found my dog, whom she loved very much. We found him dead in our yard together, and that was a really pretty traumatic experience. Here's how I encourage you to handle it. First of all, keep your language very simple and don't hide anything. Don't worry about using words like death and dying and heaven. I personally believe, this is my personal faith belief, that dogs go to heaven. I believe that heaven is a great place. It's very much like the Garden of Eden. And in the Garden of Eden, there were pets. So to me, if heaven resembles the Garden of Eden, then pets are there. That's just my personal belief. But I don't know your personal belief. So this is what I said to my granddaughter. I said, honey, Willie isn't with us anymore. This is our dog. Willie isn't with us anymore, and he has died, and you can see that. And she was crying, and I was crying. And she looked up at me, and she said, does that mean that Willie is with Grandma now, my mother who had passed? And I said, yes, honey, it does. She said, is Willie in heaven? And I said, he is in heaven. And then she looked at me and said, well, why can I still see him if he's in heaven? And I said, well, honey, there's two parts to dogs and there's two parts to people. And you can see his body, but the very best part of him was not his body. It was something deeper in him. And the very best part of us as people isn't our bodies, but it's our spirits. It's our personality. It's our heart. It's our minds. It's who we are. It's not what we look like, but it's who we are. And that part of who we are is the part that goes on to heaven. So believe it or not, she was not quite 4 years old. She understood what I was talking about. And I could see this calm come over her. So I would encourage you, Cindy, to say something to your children like, our dog, Sam, is no longer going to be with us. He has to die. His body will go on and his body will decompensate. But the best part of who he is going to live on. And if you believe in heaven, you can say he goes to heaven. If you don't believe he goes to heaven, then just say, but the best part of who he is not going to be here anymore. But I'm going to be here as your mom to help you. You are going to be sad, but you're going to be okay. You're going to see me cry and you're going to see daddy cry and you're going to feel like crying. But we're all going to be okay. And whenever you feel like crying, you can go to your room and cry or you can come to me and I will help you. But it's going to be okay. So you speak truthfully to your kids. You don't avoid talking about death. You encourage the kids to talk about your pet after he dies. And I would also encourage you to bury him with the kids. You know, kids can really handle this. And in many ways, they handle it a lot better than the parents do. As I said, I believe, Cindy, this is going to be a harder process for you and your husband than it is going to be for your kids. But don't be afraid. You're going to get through it just fine. Parents, I love answering your questions, so please keep sending them in to me. You can email me your parenting questions to askmeg@megmeekermd.com. I want to thank my guests, Mark and Susan Merrill. What a great conversation we had with them, talking about the little things that we can do in our marriages as spouses to have healthier marriages so that we can have healthier homes for our kids to grow up in. Now let's recap my points to ponder. First, your marriage matters to your kids. Second, remember, small, simple changes by spouses bring about extraordinary changes in marriages. Third, since mothers or the stay-at-home parent set the tone in the homes, A healthy marriage helps her set a better one. And finally, good marriages show how men should treat women and women treat men, and your kids need to know those. So until next time, parents, remember, great kids are raised, not born.
Hey, this is Bobby, producer of Meg Meeker's Parenting Great Kids podcast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to episode 39, Healthy Marriages, Healthy Families. And thanks to you, Dr. Meg's Parenting Revolution has grown to over 1 million downloads. You can like Dr. Meeker on Facebook and follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Meg Meeker MD. Just as a reminder, go to MegMeekerMD.com and sign up for her newsletter for giveaway opportunities and updates. And don't forget to share the podcast, write us a review, and click subscribe so you won't miss an episode.